I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am here weekdays. I was here last night, too, for the Kim Wade Show. Had a good time with that. But I am usually here 9 to 11 each weekday, giving you a safe space. If you're an independent thinker or aspire to be, next hour, because it's Wednesday. Every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock, we focus in on what I believe to be one of the most empowering segments in Mississippi radio, and that is Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. If you still want to trust your health, the health of your loved ones, the health of your children, to the mainstream medical establishment after what you have seen take place over the last 18 months, well then, God help you. Good luck with that. But if you want to reclaim your health and be in charge of your own health outcomes, then next hour, I think, could be a good segment for you. If you missed the show, you can get the podcast. I do podcast the show. You can find it by looking up The Mike Madison Show. I do it through Podbean, so you can go to themikemadisonshow.podbean.com or subscribe on Apple Podcast, and then I'm finding out it's in other spots. These people, I guess, they grab them out of the air, but I know the updates go to those places. And I saw yesterday, looking at my stats on the podcast, that I've had an uptick in the number of people in Canada who have downloaded the show. I'm always suspicious there's bots. I get random things from Czechoslovakia and things like that. But if there is anybody up in Canada that's got any interesting reports, my email is mikemadison@wyab.com. And I would love to get boots on the ground reports from what's going on in Canada, because they went full-on totalitarian, too. Kind of difficult to judge Canada with some of the news I've got about the U.S. today, but I have been very discouraged to see the pastors arrested in Canada, the overarching police presence there. I'd like to know. I've always been a big fan of our neighbors to the north. I spent a lot of time up in Canada growing up, had relatives up there. Beautiful country, pretty cool laid-back vibe. Horrible, horrible prime minister. I'd like you also to explain to me, do you have the same voter fraud up in Canada that you do in the United States? Is that the only way that Justin Trudeau held onto his seat recently? Why you couldn't get rid of that guy is absolutely beyond me. But anyway, definitely let me know what's going on in Canada if you hear it. I've got to address something real quick. I just spent about 30 minutes talking to Clay Edwards. I like Clay. I listened to his show. He and I agree on a lot of things. We might disagree very respectfully on some things. It's always interesting to have conversations with people who have different points of view. We'll leave every conversation with a laugh or a conversation. I knew Clay years and years ago. We worked together for a period of time, so it's kind of neat to see him come in here and start a show a while back. But I got to tell you, did I hear him right last hour say that he thinks Van Halen was best when Sammy Hagar was the front man? I was listening on the radio, so I couldn't rewind. I am hoping I misheard him. Because that statement alone, that he believes that Sammy Hagar, that the Van Hagar years were the golden age of Van Halen, that statement alone has got me rethinking my entire relationship with the guy. Look, I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. I don't play partisan politics. I don't care if you're black or white. I don't do racial stuff. I don't care what religion you are. I don't care what country you're from. But I've got to draw a line somewhere, and anybody who thinks that Van Halen was best when Sammy Hagar ran the show, are you kidding me? David Lee Roth was by far and away one of the greatest frontmen of rock music of all time. And Clay seems so normal when you talk to him. And when you listen to his show and then you find out something like that. I mean, and some things just so dramatically change a relationship that I'm not sure there's any coming back. I can't look at Clay Edwards the same ever again. David Lee Roth, Van Halen. The 1977 Van Halen 1, Unchained. Are you kidding me? That sugar, sappy, high synth Sammy Hagar years. It's just, you know, some things like that, they can't be unsaid. You know what I'm saying? And the sad thing about it is that Clay's opinion that Sammy Hagar was the better frontman for Van Halen, this is not some knee-jerk reaction that he hasn't put a lot of thought into. You know, a lot of times we react to things and you can change someone's mind or talk them down from that because it's something new and they haven't considered all the angles. Clay has had decades to think about this. And he has still come to the conclusion that Sammy Hagar was better than David Lee Roth. I really don't know where we go. My relationship with Clay has changed forever. Hopefully we can still politely coexist here at the station, or maybe next time I talk to him, I can help him see the light. I was talking about a show, it's probably years ago now, trying to figure out who the best frontman for rock music has ever been. Mick Jagger is certainly up there. I was always a big Stones fan. But David Lee Roth is in the hunt. He's in the hunt for best frontman ever. Not to take it, I like Sammy Hagar. I'm sympathetic to not being able to drive 55 and all those good things, but come on, man, Clay. Next segment, we're going to have Duke Pesta in. Duke Pesta is going to be leading this this rally at Tri-County Academy this Saturday night, and he's talking about critical race theory. He apparently is touring the country explaining the dangers of this thing and how to combat it in the schools. This is something that we've been talking a lot here at WYAB about when it's come to masks, vaccine mandates, about taking back your school boards, these kinds of things. So it's important. This will be an interesting get together on Saturday night. Saturday itself, it's a whole day of protesting, taking to the streets. I got to go out and find myself one black glove. So I can get my clenched fist with a black glove up. No mask mandates, no vaccine mandates. We got Mississippi Parents for Vaccine Rights doing a rally Saturday morning. I believe it's from 10 until 4 down at the Sillars Building. You need to get out there. This is the time for people who love freedom to start taking to the streets, just like the people who fight for some of the other nut jobberies that they're fighting for out there. And then Saturday night, we'll have this event with Duke Pesta and critical race theory, because I keep saying it. I'm sorry to repeat myself. If you can't take control of your schools, please just give up on everything else. You're not going to change China. You're not going to change Congress. You're not going to change your state legislature. If you can't affect change at your children's school, then it's not going to happen anywhere else. So we'll talk about that up. I guess I'll touch on this real quick before I take a break, and then we'll get Duke Pesta on with us. This story, I'll admit, you know, I make show notes, and these are really just for me. I don't share these, except for my health show notes. If you want those, I do share those with people. But I've got a lot of grammatical errors and spelling errors on this. I just jot out notes as I think about them. I've actually got an LOL after this headline for my own reference, because apparently I was laughing out loud when I read this story. This is the story of the banana republic that is the United States, the Axios story that came out yesterday. We touched on this briefly last Thursday when Steven Utroska was in. $1 trillion platinum coin could be minted at the last minute. $1 trillion platinum coin could be minted, quote, within hours of the Treasury Secretary's decision to do so, Philip Deal, former director of the United States Mint, tells Axios. The structure of the Axios things, next paragraph, is why it matters. Congressional solutions to the debt ceiling problem could take weeks to implement, especially if the reconciliation process is used, and time is running out. In case of emergency, $1 trillion coin could be deployed to bridge any gap between the money running out and the debt ceiling being raised. So they just print out a coin. It's going to be made out of platinum. But like everything else in our society, it will have no intrinsic value whatsoever. This is how insane this country has gone. We have got people at the Treasury Department. Do you understand the power people at Treasury have? People at the Federal Reserve? They are dictating the terms of your commercial and professional life on a daily basis. They're affecting the future of your children. And these nut jobs think that they are somehow going to, what, this is what they're going to do. They're going to print up a coin. They're just going to call it $1 trillion. Because we now live in a country where you just say things. You don't actually have to back it up. It doesn't have to be based on facts or anything like that. You just flat out say things. And supposedly they happen. So they're going to mint up this $1 trillion coin. They're going to give it to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve is just going to print out $1 trillion and shoot it on over to the government. Then the Fed has got on its balance sheet what it will refer to as an asset of a $1 trillion coin. That probably costs somewhere, I don't know how big this coin's going to be. I mean, if it's the size of Arizona, maybe there's something to that, but it's going to be something you could throw into your pocket. They're just going to type on it, press into it, $1 trillion, and it's just supposed to be that. I mean, if this is how easy it is, why don't they just print up 30 of them and go ahead and pay off the national debt? We are living in a banana republic. Those things we have laughed at when it comes to third world countries are now happening here in the United States. And it's not over. Next segment, when I come back, we're going to have Duke Pesta on with us, talk critical race theory and this event on Saturday. And then they've got some more headlines on the other side of that. We're entering the financial endgame here in the United States. The people running the show have lost all sense and all control. God help us all. I'll be right back. All right, welcome back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and I am happy to have on with us a gentleman by the name of Duke Pesta. We've been talking about this, you know, this Saturday is a mobilization day for freedom lovers and particularly people who want to take back our schools, take back our lives, take back a lot of our freedoms. We've got rallies morning, noon, and during the evening. We're going to have Duke Pesta here in town at Tri-County Academy to talk to us about critical race theory. So, Duke, thanks so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about what you are barnstorming the country, warning people about.
Well, primarily, critical race theory and what's happening in the public schools. The public schools have become it's almost like they're a special agency of the government designed to simply transform our kids, break the bond between mothers and children, and to politicize these kids to become radical progressives, qualifying for Antifa by the time they graduate college. So what's going on in the public schools is much bigger than critical race theory, but we're also giving a talk Saturday morning about how the public schools have appropriated the health care of our kids.
Absolutely.
And put themselves in the primary place over our kids.
Yeah, I've gotten involved with some of the parents here. My kids are out of school a couple of years ago. My kids are 20, but you know, some of the schools here that were so great for my kids for years, you know, this authoritarianism, these mandates, these other kinds of things, it really has highlighted the fact that for too long, parents have really kind of dropped their kids off and abdicated control of their children for 8 hours a day, not really paying attention to exactly how arrogant the schools have gotten in their role in our children's lives, and it's been nice to get involved with parents and see them starting to make moves to take that back.
Well, it is about time. You know, this has always been the concern. This is why the Founding Fathers made no provision whatsoever for federal government to intervene in education in this country. They knew, and we survived from 1776 to about 1850 with no public school system. Because the founders knew that once you put a federal entity in charge, sooner or later it was going to catch up with you. They're going to start educating your kids for their purposes and not for the local community or the local family.
Right. And, you know, Duke, just relax. The Republicans have been telling us since about 1984 that they're any day now they're going to get rid of the Department of Education and return schools at least to the states. So any day now, I'm sure it's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, the Republicans, I blame the Republicans more than the Democrats. The Democrats have told us for 60 years that they were going to use education against us. They told us that they recognized very early on that the place for radical revolution is in the classroom, the elementary classroom. That's actually a quote from Bill Ayers of the Weather Underground. So the Democrats have told us this to our face for 60 years. The Republican response is to put their heads in the sand and say, gee, education is just too hard for us to figure out. So we're going to let the progressives have complete control. And our only answer to this huge problem is school choice, right? We've heard that mantra for 30 years from the Republicans. They still haven't really given it to us. And how is there going to be choice when every school in the land has now been compromised by this lousy, lousy, highly politicized curriculum?
Yeah, and tell us a little bit, how widespread is critical race theory in practice right now?
You know, one of the great lies of the public schools, every public school, I'm sure in Mississippi, every public school is going to tell you that we don't do it. And that's one of those lies, like, you know, when they said 10 years ago, we don't have Common Core. And when you looked into it, they actually didn't have Common Core, but what they had was all Common Core aligned textbooks. It's the same thing here. There are no textbooks out there that say A Dummy's Guide to Critical Race Theory. There's no books you could pull off the shelf and say, hey, here's a book advertising critical race theory for elementary school teachers. Instead, critical race theory is a paradigm. It's a way of teaching. So it doesn't matter with what book you put in front of them. You could put the Bible in the classroom. And these critical race teachers, what they will do is they will start from the assumption that God is a tyrant because he has all the power. And that you go through the Bible and you do feminist readings and you do Marxist readings of the Bible, right? And so the real problem with critical race theory is it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. Our teachers have been trained now for 20 years to deconstruct books, not to teach them.
Right.
To project onto books all of these radical messages, whether they're there or not. And that's what makes it so much harder to eliminate than Common Core. It's an attitude and a pedagogy more than it is a curriculum.
Right, yeah. Teachers, religions, these kinds of things, as soon as you have interpreters that have an agenda, rather than just, you know, explaining and informing, they begin to interpret things for you. That's when you start getting in some dangerous territory if they take a tack.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. What? Tell us real quick. We got about 2 or 3 minutes. You know, what is it about critical race theory that is so damaging? I mean, there has been racial injustice in this country before. You know, contrary to what the left believes, we've made huge strides, and as a matter of fact, worldwide, we're leaders in ending slavery. I mean, slavery had been around for thousands of years, and the U.S. was one of the first places to change tact on that. But there has been racial injustice. What is the problem with teaching that to our kids?
Well, you just hit it on the head. They're not teaching the accurate history of race in this country.
Right.
They have denied progress. They're teaching kids today in 2021 that we're worse off now than we were in slavery. Remember what Maxine Waters said when those ICE agents were using horses to guide illegal immigrants away from the border and accuse them falsely of whipping people. Well, Maxine Waters actually said, and this is what the Democrats believe, the progressives believe, she said, this is worse than anything we ever saw in slavery.
Right.
And
right.
So the big problem with critical race theory is it does not acknowledge, number one, that there's been any progress made. Number two, it blames the entire history of slavery in human, all the way going back to the foundations of human time, on white American Europeans. You would think by listening to the critical race theorists that there has never been a slaveholding nation in the history of the world except us. So not only are they teaching our kids that a lying version of our history, one that doesn't account for our tremendous progress, as you pointed out, and how relative to other countries in the world, we have tremendous freedom. I ask tell my university students all the time, if we are the racist, sexist, bigoted, culture that we're told we are, how come black and brown skinned people are killing themselves to get here every day?
Right.
So
yeah.
That's the problem. It's the lie. And then it's the idea that it's only an American problem. That's the other big lie.
Right. Yeah, it's quite something to think about, and for a left that constantly says we need to be on guard for hate speech and everybody needs to be censored if they say the wrong thing, and then they come out with things like this that are just overarching ways to try to drive one group of people to hate another group of people. It's insane. But tell us,
that's my final observation, is that they're using racism now to fight racism. That's new too.
Right.
They're blaming, basically, if you're white skinned, you're guilty. And this is itself a violation of the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
Yeah, yeah. I think Martin Luther King would be ashamed to see this kind of thing being taught. Real quick, we got about 30 seconds. Tell us a little bit about the event on Saturday. You'll be speaking.
Yeah, this is going to be Saturday evening. It's called Not on Our Watch Conference and Rally. The doors open at 5:30, the event starts at 7 at the Tri-County Gymnasium or football field, 400 Cox Ferry Road in Flora, Mississippi. So get there early. It's going to be a really important talk. This is the most comprehensive talk that you're ever going to see. And by the time it's over, you will understand every aspect of what your kids are suffering through right now.
Yeah, and people need to, you know, like we started the conversation with, people need to understand more what's going on in their classrooms and exert parental control back over it. We've abdicated our responsibility there for too long.
Yes, sir.
Great, Duke. Look forward to seeing you on Saturday. Thanks so much for calling in.
Appreciate your time today.
All right, bye-bye. All right, there you go. It's Saturday night here at Tri-County Academy. This is something that people need to show up for. You need to be there downtown on Saturday morning. You need to be out in Tri-County Academy Saturday night. Fighting the power, man. I'll get my one black glove. I can raise it in the air. I don't know. Is that contradictory to the message that we just had there? But I like the symbol of resistance. One glove, fist hair, in the air. Anyway, we'll be right back. Stay with me. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. What's the frequency? Can it be shot? Bends a train. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, phone number 601-879-0002. If you want to call in this next half hour before we get into Hump Day Health, Clay Edwards, it's so sad to see what's happening to him. He's still texting me telling me that Van Hagar was better than Van Halen. I knew he was going to be incapable of any logical, common sense thought on that, Van Halen being one of the greatest rock bands to ever exist, and David Lee Roth was a big part of that. David Lee Roth, he lost something when he came back. Did you see any of the reunion stuff when David Lee Roth, this is the guy that used to have the flowing locks and the leopard or the tiger print spandex pants, and he was jumping around the stage, and he came back, he was wearing one of those cabbie's hats, and he had his hands in his pockets trying to sing Van Halen songs, and he had forgotten the words. It was very sad. I will admit that David Lee Roth overstayed his welcome with Van Halen when he attempted to come back, but I got to tell you, Clay, you know, I love the people up here at the station. We're fellow travelers. If you listen across the spectrum of the shows, you'll hear we're freedom fighters. We're not down with mandates being bossed around by people. This is why I'm the stealth libertarian here trying to infect everybody with my philosophy, but there's also somebody in the station that is installing the toilet paper in the bathroom with the sheets feeding down from behind the roll. What kind of an aberrant person? Yeah, I talked yesterday on Kim Wade's show. I kind of broke down for that audience. I've done it on this show before, too, about how these antipsychotics, antidepressants are the common thread in all mass shootings. At least about 95% of them I've confirmed. These people have been on these psychotropic drugs. I'm not sure. I could probably do my research. But people that do not load the toilet paper correctly, you know, it's supposed to come off the top, right? Not out from the bottom. I would imagine people who show such a disregard for the way they load toilet paper are also probably to be suspected. Something antisocial about people like that. So I'm discovering things about people around the station. Really concerning me. Anyway, Clay, good luck in your journey with that horrible philosophy of Van Hagar being better than Van Halen. Anyway, we'll still be friends. We'll politely disagree on that one. Anyway, you know, I did the story before we had Duke on about the $1 trillion coin. They're just going to print one up. Isn't that great? Does anybody have one of these presses? Because I'll come up with the platinum if you've got the press, and we'll make ourselves $1 trillion. I don't even, I'll take a $1 billion coin. See, I'm not greedy. I'll do a $1 billion coin. But the financial endgame for the United States is nigh, I will tell you. I've got another story here. It says, in the U.S., the monetary and fiscal stimulus spigots are turning off as the Fed threatens to start tapering in November and Congress devolves into gridlock over both the next stimulus package as well as the debt ceiling. Of course, the Fed's never actually going to deliver on these things. They're just threatening it to make it look like they actually have any control, but they won't ever stop money printing. But listen to this statistic. The U.S. currently spends 111% of its tax receipts on the true cost of just servicing its debt. You think you're paying for roads and bridges and soldier salaries and all of these other things? The U.S. currently spends 111% of its tax receipts on the true cost of servicing its debt. And the Fed is now chained to printing up the difference. It's a banana republic, people. We're going to see some very, very interesting things going forward. I got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
I am, Mike. How are you, sir?
Hey, good, Robert. How are you?
Hey, good. You know, luckily, these fiscal conservative Republicans are holding the line right now and not they're not going to vote for the raising the debt ceiling.
Yeah, they are. Well, they're fighters, aren't they?
They've, you know. Every other time it's done by a voice call vote, yay or nay. But this time, by God, they're standing up and they're taking a stance on this. We're not doing this. You know?
Yeah, I was going to play a clip of Mitch McConnell where basically he said, look, they can do it without us, which is very true. And what it really shows is Republicans are just thinking, oh, great, we don't have to go on the record doing this. What did they raised the debt ceiling 3 times under Donald Trump when they had control. And I was going to play a clip from Mitch McConnell, but it's so early in the morning. I didn't want people dozing off at the wheel while they were driving, listening to the show. So I didn't do it. But yeah, this idea of the fiscally responsible conservative right now is just laughable at this point.
Well, that's what they want, is for them to go ahead and do it without the Republicans having to do anything to that way they're not on the record. They can go back and say, we tried to stop them, but we couldn't.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that the argument –
you need to vote for more of us.
The argument that Biden's given right now and McConnell, they do the exact same argument every – it's like Groundhog Day, you know, the threats of a government shutdown, all of the doomsday scenarios and the continuing resolution. I mean, they do this – this is like a – it's a pre-programmed like a series about every 2 years, 4 years, 5 years. They do this and they roll the same things out and they always say the same things. Well, we need to have an adult conversation about spending, but we also pay our bills. We can't default on anything. And Joe Biden, it was kind of funny. I may try to find the clip, but he said, you know, this is Social Security payments and Medicare payments and soldier salaries. He didn't mention welfare state or banker bailouts or any of those other things that they use this money for.
Immigrant care, right, or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, he tried to tug at the heartstrings of those things that normal Americans might be okay with, even though I don't even think they should be okay with those. But anyway.
Well, but, you know, everybody's going to get up in arms if they, well, they said I wouldn't get my Social Security check.
Yeah.
So, you know, but thankfully we've got the adults who are trying to have an adult conversation.
Right.
But those fiscal conservatives. So the problem is we just need more Republicans up there, and that's the problem.
That'll take care of it
all.
We
don't have enough Republicans there. Hey, on the other thing, don't be too hard on Clay. He's young and dumb, naive.
Okay, so you know, I'm not crazy, right? I mean, Van Halen blows away Van Hagar. David Lee Roth versus Sammy Hagar with Van Halen. It's not even a contest, is it? Am I missing something?
It's not a contest. You and I lived through the 70s. He didn't, and he doesn't. He probably is judging it by David Lee Roth came back when it was all.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe he missed the original David Lee Roth. I still remember the Jackson Coliseum, Van Halen coming on, and you know the lights go down, and the beginning of Unchained comes on. I can still get that kind of the shivers up my spine of Unchained with David Lee Roth at the Jackson Coliseum.
There have been very few people in rock history that could be on stage with David Lee Roth in his prime.
In his prime, exactly. Well, thank you very much.
In the 70s, he didn't have an equal. He was up there with, well, I shouldn't say he didn't have an equal, but he was up there in the tops. He was it.
Well, hopefully Clay is listening and waking up. I mean, you know, this show is about waking people up to a whole lot of things that they're just dead wrong on. I don't care if it's war on terror, war on drugs, or Van Halen versus Van Hagar. So hopefully Clay is listening and this shakes him awake. So I appreciate
you. You know, for a guy who spent that much time in the music industry and everything, I'm sorely disappointed.
Yeah, I know.
That he doesn't see the light.
You know, there's everybody's brain is constructed differently, and obviously Clay's just got one little glitch in there that's really it's probably keeping him down, and I hope that he recovers. Godspeed, Clay.
He's probably going to start, you know, touting the wonderfulness of the Backstreet Boys or something. I don't know what he's thinking.
I don't know either. We should just have sympathy for him. Hey, Robert, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Bye. All right. Well, I think I have finally staked out a popular opinion here on the show. You know, I'll criticize Donald Trump. I'll do my libertarian thing about telling you how bad Mike Pompeo is and Tom Cotton, a bunch of the Republican heroes here. But I think I finally stumbled on something that I can probably get the majority of the public on, and that's the David Lee Roth versus Sammy Hagar contest. Anyway, when I come back, we're going to get into kind of heading into a healthcare segment. The numbers are starting to come out on the new Merck pill. You've heard about this one, right? Cuts hospitalizations by 50%, which means it's about two-thirds as good as ivermectin, the Merck pill that already existed for about $3. But we're starting to get some of the financials on the new Merck pill. You already know what I'm going to say when I come back, don't you? You're not going to guess. They're actually going to be making a pretty substantial profit on this new pill. We'll talk about that when I come back. Stay with me.
You can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
All right, so you've heard that Merck has come out with a new pill. They got all excited about this. Of course, Anthony Fauci says it doesn't replace the value of that tremendous vaccine, but Merck's come out with a pill that they say will reduce hospitalizations and deaths by 50% if used early in treatment of COVID. This is interesting because Merck already had a pill called ivermectin that cut the risk from most studies of hospitalization and death by something like 78%. Somehow this is an improvement. Well, not an improvement for you and me, not an improvement for the patient, but certainly an improvement for Merck's bottom line. Check this out. Merck's new not ivermectin COVID-19 treatment, molnupiravir. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that exactly right. You know, at first I looked at that name and I thought, what a terrible name. I mean, it's unpronounceable to look at it. But then I looked it up. It's actually Latin for screwing the taxpayer. So now I understand why they give it that name. Anyway, this drug cost $17.74 to produce. Yet the company is charging the U.S. government $712 for the treatment, a 40x markup. This is according to The Intercept, citing a report issued last week by the Harvard School of Public Health and King's College Hospital in London. Now, I will say, I put the over-under at $3,500 for a round of treatment, so I was wrong. I picked the over in that amount. But it costs $17.74, and the company is charging the U.S. government $712 for it. But Mike, the pharmaceutical apologist will say, Mike, they have to pay for all of that research and development. It's expensive to bring a drug to market. Really. The story goes on. The pill, originally developed using U.S. government funds as a possible treatment for Venezuelan equine encephalitis, cut the risk of hospitalizations and death in half of a randomized trial of 775 adults with mild to moderate COVID who were considered at high risk for disease due to comorbidities such as obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. Did you get that part? See, this is what they'll tell you at the pharmaceutical level. They got to pay for all that R&D. That's why these drugs are so expensive. The pill, originally developed using U.S. government funds. You taxpayers out there, you've already paid for this thing. but they're going to charge you $712 for it should you need it, and that's only after you've gotten the shot. The trial of this drug was stopped early so the company could apply for emergency use authorization. The drug did not benefit patients who were already hospitalized with severe disease. It's ivermectin, but less effective at, what would that be, about 220 times the cost. Clearly, the pill could bring in massive profits to Merck and its partner on the drug, Ridge Biotherapeutics, which licensed the drugs from Emory University in 2020 and then sold the worldwide rights to the drug to Merck for a sum which has not been disclosed. Yet, as Quartz points out, only Merck and Ridgeback will profit from any new antiviral, which they say, quote, could be one of the most lucrative drugs ever, bringing in as much as $7 billion by the end of this year alone. That's taxpayer money. And then get this one, another stab in the heart, particularly to a libertarian, but really probably anybody listening to me who's sick of watching the taxpayer fund the research, the development with the vaccines the taxpayer has paid for. The research, the development, hell, the U.S. taxpayer paid for the disease itself. Anthony Fauci picked your pockets, sent the money over to Wuhan, developed the coronavirus. You even had to pay for the disease. I mean, this one is a slap in the face, I got to tell you, to the U.S. taxpayer. We have paid for the research and development. The government has paid for the marketing, up to and including $3 billion program to send out to influencers to get people to line up to take these shots. TikTokers, Instagram models, celebrities, pastors. $3 billion has been handed out to them to convince you to go take this thing, not based on science, but based on the fact you'll follow somebody who does TikTok videos. And then there's this Ridgeback. This is this company who got the rights to this drug. Co-founder Wendy Holman told CNBC in an interview last week that they asked for, but, quote, never got government funding for the manufacture of this molnupiravir. Again, that is Latin for screwing the taxpayer. So they even wanted to get government funding for the manufacturing of this thing. You understand there's a difference between, you know, the cost of materials that goes into it, get all their little chemicals all together and make up the recipe and all that stuff. But they actually wanted us to pay for the machines that would press the pills and create the bottles and the labels. They didn't even want to incur that expense for a drug that they're going to charge $712 for. The CEO for this company said, we asked for, quote, but never got government funding for the manufacture of this drug. Now, if this was put out into the free market at $712, I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with it. I'd probably still be doing this segment pointing out what a dastardly crew this Merck company is for doing a 40x profit margin on a drug that the U.S. taxpayer paid for all along the way. But it's not in the free market because the government is going to go ahead and buy these pills. Then they're going to come out and tell you that they're free. And the left, for some reason, is going to think that, oh, wow, Merck is just another charitable organization like Pfizer and Moderna. They love us. Because if this went out into the free market at $712, most people would look at this one that cuts deaths and hospitalizations by 50%, and they would compare it to the $2 ivermectin pill. I guess maybe it's like $12 for a course of ivermectin. They'd look at the $12 for a course of ivermectin that actually is 50% better, cuts deaths in hospitals by around 78%, and they would, in the free market, they would choose the $12 course of treatment over the $712 treatment and get better results. But this is not a free market thing. This is the government, Republicans and Democrats, hand in hand, lying in bed. They're currently right now smoking a cigarette in bed with the pharmaceutical lobbyists after what they have just done to the U.S. taxpayer. $712, 40X. I got to tell you, it's a good gig. It's a good and me. How dumb am I? I'm going to spend the next hour to tell you to get things like vitamin D, exercise, and good sleep. Am I going to be paid for that? Well, not really. I could talk about anything next hour, but I'll tell you about some real things that can impact your health. This really, as I say, I start just about every show for Hump Day Health explaining to you, you need to take control of your health. How much longer do you want these companies to have their way with you? There may be some pharmaceuticals out there that really help. Antibiotics certainly have helped a lot of people. Of course, they've been overused and misused. But I could cheer for any innovation that actually does contribute to Americans' health. But time and time and time again, I don't know what the percentage would be. It's got to be about 90-95% of pharmaceuticals are really just foisted upon people at astronomical prices. And the only reason they get away with it is because Congress and the government is behind them. These pharmaceutical companies would never stand in a free market where people were educated. It just wouldn't happen. And this is why I'm an advocate for free markets. It's the only thing that solves this kind of situation. Be right back. All right, welcome back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Wednesday. Every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock, we take a break from other stuff and focus solely on the health of Americans, where I beg, plead, cajole, try to convince you to take control of your own health. Take it away from the medical establishment that's picking your pockets and making you sick along the way. I explain at the beginning of every show, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a biologist, I'm not an immunologist, I'm not a virologist, I'm not a surgeon, I'm not a nurse, I'm not a therapist, I'm nothing, I've got no certification to advise you on your own health. I'm just trying to give you some things to grab onto to begin doing your own research to reclaim your own health. It works, and it's largely based around nutrition. Some lifestyle stuff we've talked about. Chemicals and things you can get out of your system. You can clean your house with different things. All kinds of things you can do, but it's largely based around nutrition. The United States has become one giant food desert. I was talking to one of the guys that works at my gym, and he was complaining. I think we were talking about inflation or something like that. You can imagine what a conversation in the locker room of a gym sounds like with Mike Madison. We somehow got talking to inflation. He's a young guy, and he said, "Yeah, my wife buys these $6 eggs. They're like free-range organic eggs." And I jumped up and I said, "Your wife's right. You're wrong. Tell your wife to keep buying those good eggs. Don't buy the sweatshop eggs." Who wants to buy an egg that was born into sadness if you've ever seen the way conventional chickens are raised? Get the best quality food you can, and a lot of things will fall into place. You'll feel better. You'll look better. You'll be mentally better off, and you'll save a ton of money off pharmaceuticals, as we discussed last segment with Merck, marking up their new antiviral for COVID by 40 times. I mean, that really should motivate you to get off that pill treadmill in the first place. I got a quote of the day today. This is from just a tweet. I've started kind of getting a lot of quotes from just regular people out there because they have words of wisdom in short segments, particularly on Twitter. This is Tania, the herbalist. I ran across this tweet from her. She said, "Some of you think you're listening to science, and when you're actually listening to paid promotional ads by trillion-dollar industries that make up their own science, and the majority of that science benefits them, not you." She's exactly right. I want to play this rant. It's from a pathologist. And one of the reasons I want to do it is because I liked it, and number two, it's because we are just not allowed to hear on mainstream media any people who disagree with what has taken place over the past 18 months. These people are censored. But this is a pathologist. I believe he's from Great Britain. But he's just commenting on what he has seen. And he's another one of these doctors that is looking around at the medical establishment saying, what has happened to you people? How have you lost your senses in this way? Anyway, I thought this was It's interesting to hear the take of somebody, and he's going to give you his credentials at the beginning of this thing so you understand this is not a guy in a van down by the river. This is a guy that knows what he's talking about.
I'm Dr. Roger Hodgkinson, a freedom-loving pathologist from Canada. I'm a fellow of the American College of Pathologists and the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada. My medical degrees are from Cambridge University in the UK, and I've held a number of significant positions, including being an assistant professor at the University of Alberta, president of the Association of Laboratory Physicians of Alberta, chairman of the Canadian Examination Board in Pathology, CEO of a large community laboratory, and currently I'm the chairman of an American biotechnology company involved in DNA sequencing.
And he has to be on Rumble, because he'd be censored on YouTube, on Twitter, anywhere on Google. So this man, with all of those credentials, obviously creme de la creme up there in Canada, has been relegated to Rumble. So I play these things because a lot of people won't run across it.
I have a number of important messages for you resulting from this unprecedented horror show, the worst in medical history. I am viscerally outraged at this totally unnecessary, grotesque human tragedy. So my first message is this: believe nothing you are being told. It's all been a pack of lies from start to finish, pure propaganda. This is nothing more than a bad seasonal flu with slightly increased risk for older people with comorbidities. My second message is that more than anything, this is a pandemic of fear. Fear that was intentionally driven by two major factors: the notorious PCR test and the viciously effective silencing of any counter-narrative. The PCR test creates over 95% false positives in perfectly well people and drives the graphs in the morning paper, where these false positives are called cases. They are no such thing. You are being lied to. The second driver of fear is the brutal silencing of the truth from the three sources you would normally rely upon to form your own independent judgment: politicians, the media, and physicians. Particularly MDs, who by their cowardly silence have decided to put income ahead of ethics. The ethics we physicians are supposed to hold dear: first do no harm and inform consent. Fear in turn became the excuse for politicians and unelected bureaucrats to enforce the ludicrous, totally arbitrary mandates that have no consensus for effectiveness in the medical literature. None. I'm talking here about masks, social distancing, travel bans, and lockdowns. They couldn't work, haven't worked, and will not work. So my third message is simply this: read my lips. Nothing works except effective prophylaxis with vitamin D and early treatment with Dr. McCullough's protocol. It's just politics playing medicine, and that's a very dangerous game. They dress themselves in the flag, demanding that only they can protect you from all of life's risks. It can't be done. I can tell you with categorical certainty as a pathologist: death happens. Life is risky. Get used to it, just like you did with the past flu epidemics and every day when you drive your car. Governments must get used to the fact that modern medicine is totally impotent at controlling the spread of respiratory viruses. We must simply accommodate to them in ways we have done most effectively in past flu epidemics, with liberal doses of the cheapest, most effective medicine there is: common sense. Flip-flop Fauci created COVID-19 when his gain-of-function research escaped from the lab in Wuhan. You shouldn't be forced to put your life and your child's life on the line by getting vaxxed just to solve the problem he created. That is government tyranny and indescribably offensive. So for God's sake, don't let them scare you into getting vaxxed. Tell them to stop the shot. Thank you.
And there you go. I think he's just about dead on the whole thing. And he wanted to summarize a couple of things he said. Number one, he said there's nothing we can do about a respiratory virus. As Mike Madison says, virus gonna virus. Been saying it for over a year now. And the other thing he brought up, and I touched on this last night when I was on Kim Wade's show, and I talked a lot about antidepressants and how they have decided to treat everybody's sadness with a pill. You've got a medical body, a medical establishment in this country that tries to even protect you against your own feelings. Normal human feelings of grief and loss and frustration, things that we should be used to, things that are part of living on planet Earth. They think they can protect you from even being sad. This is the over-medication of our society. And as he says, what we've seen over the last 18 months is just an absolute human tragedy. I'll be right on, just a piece of lead to bite on, but I'm not to fly my kite on. Do you want to flash a light on? Take a look, it's on display for you. Coming down, no, not today. Did you meet your fortune teller? Get it off with no. It has been a real frustration for people like me, people in the natural health community, to watch a disease that is really preys on bad immune systems and comorbidities that in a lot of cases are controllable by people. And instead of explaining, instead of Thomas Dobbs doing press conferences on ways you can empower yourself to be more immune, not only to COVID, but to regular flus and even more drastic chronic conditions, they have focused entirely on things like useless masks, social distancing, plexiglass, that we had a real opportunity to raise an alarm bell, a wake-up call to people to start getting their health in check. And one of those main things that has been shown to be a huge comorbidity to COVID is obesity. But it does not stop there. This is a study found on studyfinds.com, which came out this week from Cambridge, England. More body fat dramatically raises the risk of cancers of the digestive systems, warned scientists. And listen to these statistics. The likelihood of tumor developing in the stomach or liver soars by 13% for every additional unit of body mass index, BMI, according to the new findings. That's 13% for every additional unit of BMI. It's not just if you're overweight, if you're obese, then your chances of developing these digestive cancers goes up. No, it's 13% higher for every single point you add to BMI. Researchers also warn the risk of esophageal cancers increases by 10% and pancreatic cancer by 6%. Again, this is by BMI points. Obesity is a major factor in all four types of cancer, and shedding the pounds can prevent them, research shows. According to the CDC, obesity affects nearly half, over 40% of Americans right now. And it's very interesting that, you know, we've seen cancer rates go up, and it when you stop and think about this, I've talked about the fact that over the last, I believe, 50 years, we've gone from 1 in 33 getting cancer to 1 in 3 getting cancer. At the same time, we've seen these obesity rates rise as well. we're not a healthy society, but it has so many different long-term effects. I wanted to play something for you real quick. There is a website out there called chrisbeatcancer.com. It's if you're facing a cancer diagnosis, if you're worried about preventing cancer, the guy's got a great story. He's going to tell you a little bit about it in this next clip. As a matter of fact, he will kind of tell you his story. But again, the website is chrisbeatcancer.com. And you can check this guy. He's got a ton of resources on his sites. I've put out an offer to do an interview with him. I haven't heard back from him yet. But I'd like to have him on the show. But he's got some kind of a program to radically transform your health. And it's particularly, you know, this is a guy who has survived cancer. I'll let you listen to his story just because this is another thing that the media will not cover, that people, when I tell you can take control of your health, I mean in just about every situation you can.
A cancer diagnosis sets off a catastrophic tidal wave of fear, anxiety, and confusion. In one moment, your life story is divided into two chapters, before cancer and after cancer. And you'd give anything to go back to chapter one. I was diagnosed with cancer in December 2003, 2 days before Christmas. I was 26, and it felt like a death sentence. From there, it was a whirlwind. I was rushed into surgery, and afterwards, the doctors told me I was worse than they thought. Stage 3C colon cancer. They said I needed 9 to 12 months of chemotherapy and that I only had a 60% chance of being alive in 5 years. I realized that the way I was living was killing me. I remember thinking, if my body created this, maybe my body can heal it. And then I made the hardest decision of my life. And that was the decision not to do chemotherapy. The oncologist told me I was insane. Most of my family didn't understand. I was very much alone. But I was determined to live. So I started reading and researching like crazy. I removed everything that may have contributed to my cancer. I overdosed on nutrition and did every therapy I could find and afford. I'm alive and well and cancer-free today because of the radical changes I made. I didn't get lucky. I took massive, life-changing action. 6 years after my diagnosis, I started crispycancer.com, and immediately people began asking for help. So I started coaching cancer patients one-on-one.
So this is a long video, but I wanted to play that because it's an inspiring story. And it is one of empowerment that if you are facing a cancer diagnosis, if you're worried, if you've got a family history of cancer, I've talked about it a lot. We train, or the medical establishment in this country trains, learn helplessness. Your mom had heart disease. Your dad had heart disease. Your grandfather had heart disease. You're probably going to have heart disease. Your grandmother's got Alzheimer's. Your mom ended up with Alzheimer's. You're probably going to get Alzheimer's. Your family has a history of cancers. You're probably going to get cancer. If you live in that fear, then there are things that you can do. ChrisBeatCancer.com is one resource that you can look. He gives kind of protocols for how he beat his cancer naturally. You heard him say, no chemotherapy, no radiation. And I'm not recommending that for anybody. I have not faced the diagnosis. I'm sure it's very, very scary. And you've got a lot of people telling you this is the only way that you can go. And I would imagine that nutrition doesn't work every single time. But it certainly is something that we should be focusing on, and particularly if you're trying to prevent cancers before they happen. As he said, he overdosed on nutrition. And the benefits of overdosing on nutrition, in stark contrast to overdosing on pharmaceuticals, the overdosing on nutrition is across the board, ends up being a good thing and a positive thing for your life. So anyway, the site is called chrisbeatcancer.com. If you or somebody that you love is facing a cancer diagnosis or worried about it in the future because of concerns you have maybe about your family tree, then this is something you ought to take a look at. That, and apparently from the study we just read, take those points off your BMI score. Get your BMI down. You will reduce your rates of cancer significantly. 13% in those digestive cancers for every point you take off your BMI. That should be an empowering message and something we're all in total control of. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and we're doing Hump Day Health, Natural Health News You Can Use. I just played that clip from the guy, Chris, who started the website Chris Beat Cancer. He talks about natural therapies for healing from cancer or preventing cancer. That clip was from a trailer. He's got some kind of a free program out there, kind of a kickstart for people that are interested in it. Might be something you want to check out. Now, I would imagine it may lead you into some kind of a paid program, and I just want to make a comment on that because I hear a lot of bashing of natural health people when they start to make money. It's really kind of interesting to me. People should be on guard of getting scammed by somebody, and there are scams out there online, all kinds of different things, real estate. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. But it always kind of cracks me up when you'll have somebody who puts out a ton of great information about nutrition and these kinds of things, and they also try to market supplements to you, vitamin D or superfoods or greens, things like that. And people will say, well, I love his information, but he really is just trying to sell me a bunch of stuff. Well, if it's good stuff, shouldn't you want to buy it? And shouldn't that person who is providing you life-changing, possibly life-saving information be allowed to make a living doing that? We don't seem to have a problem with Fortune 500 companies making billions of dollars. And for some reason, a lot of Americans right now are treating them like they're some kind of a benevolent charity. But you get somebody in the natural health world that wants to sell you some vitamin D capsules or some spirulina or collagen supplements, and we think they're some kind of a huckster because they're going to charge us $40 for something that will make our body operate better. It's a very bizarre thing. It's right to be on guard for being scammed out of stuff, but when you look at natural health people, realize they've decided to make this a career. And a lot of these doctors, be it Dr. Axe, Dr. Berg, Dr. Mercola, any of them that have products that they sell, that they stand behind, I don't fault them for a second for making a living, helping a whole lot of people. The whole health world is based on profits. If I'm going to help somebody profit, I'd like them to at least be helping me avoid disease and feeling better every day. So anyway, if you're interested in it, check out Chris Beat Cancer. You can also, if you want any links to any of this stuff to share with people, you can email me, MikeMadison@WIAB.com, and I'll send you my show notes page. So you've got links to anything that I cover here, or you can, if somebody might not read links, if you're trying to refer something, you can send them a podcast, and it doesn't hurt my feelings a bit if you go, nah, just go to the second half of the show. Listen to the second half, the health stuff. If somebody doesn't want to hear me debate Sammy Hagar versus David Lee Roth in the first hour or talk about the $1 trillion coin, that doesn't hurt my feelings. Not everybody's interested in that stuff. But the health stuff is where everybody should start taking some personal interest and responsibility. I've spent week before last week, talking about the low-fat diet and what a train wreck that was for Americans' health. They're slowly acknowledging that, but a lot of mainstream doctors, a lot of mainstream nutritionists are still hanging on to that, telling you to eat your whole grains and stay away from butter. I think it's been an absolute catastrophe for Americans' health. There is another piece of advice that we've been given along the way, along with low fat, is low, anyone, salt. They're always telling us to avoid salt. Now, there are, in a lot of processed foods, a whole lot of kind of junk salt to make things more savory. I am somebody who uses a lot of salt. As a matter of fact, I need to look it up, why I like salt. Is there something that my body's craving for? I've used a lot of salt on stuff. People may notice that. I always wonder if people look at me and they think, oh, this guy talks about being so healthy, but he uses so much salt. I do use a lot of salt. I may use excess salt. I may have something inside me that is craving salt because I've got a nutritional deficiency. But my blood pressure is typically something like 105 over 60. I get compliments on my blood pressure when I go to donate blood or go for an insurance exam or anything like that. So salt has been vilified along the way, too. But this is a clip from Dr. Berg, one of my favorites. And the title of this is Low Salt Increases Your Risk of Heart Attacks. And again, when you just stop and look at the advice we've been given for decades and decades now, and we're just finding out it was just 180 degrees wrong.
Now, to a lot of people, what I'm going to say is new information. We are so used to hearing that salt's bad for the heart. It's going to cause a heart attack. It's going to cause stroke. So make sure you don't overdo it on your salt. Well, that is absolutely, positively not true. A very credible, large study called the PEER study stirred up a lot of controversy. There's over 137,000 people involved in 18 countries, 667 communities. So it was a very broad population all over the place. And this is what they found. If you're consuming less than 3 grams of sodium per day, you could be at risk for getting a heart attack and a stroke. Now take a look at this graph that I have right here. The World Health Organizations and many other organizations have been recommending to keep your salt in the low range between 2.0 and 2.4 grams. That's 1 teaspoon per day. Well, it just so happens that falls within the risk factor of getting a heart attack. That is considered low sodium. And based on this study, which I'm going to put a link down below, the optimum range of sodium is between 4 and 5 grams. That's 4 to 5 teaspoons of salt. Woohoo! Apparently, you have the least amount of heart attacks compared to either too low or even too high. And they also incidentally found that potassium is very protective on the heart. The more potassium you have, the less heart attacks you have. And I've been saying that for a long time. Potassium is very, very important, especially for blood pressure, even your kidneys. I mean, the only contraindications, I'm sure there's a few others, for potassium is if you're stage 5 kidney failure. In that condition, of course, you don't want to consume that much potassium. But for most people, potassium is protective on the kidney, the heart, and definitely will help your blood pressure. Now, the question is why? Well, when you actually lower your sodium, you increase a hormone called aldosterone. That's from your adrenals. And if aldosterone's too high, you can have a lot of problems, especially with blood pressure, especially damage to the heart. There's even a class of high blood pressure medication that inhibits aldosterone. Okay, why? Because they found that the higher the aldosterone, the higher the blood pressure. So in summary, don't be afraid of salt, especially if it's sea salt. I recommend a very good quality sea salt. Himalayan sea salt is a really good one, but there's many others.
Yeah, and that is, there are differences in salt. You can look it up. I think I might have talked about it before, but Himalayan sea salt has got a whole lot of minerals in it that make it better than just regular iodized table salt. So there's even salt choices to be made. And yes, pink Himalayan sea salt is slightly more expensive than Morton's table salt. You will probably spend an extra $1 per month to get a good quality salt. I think it's worth it, particularly if you find out that getting those nutrients and getting your sodium levels up will actually prevent a heart attack. Seems like $1 a month or 2 months. I'm probably even going on the high side there. But anyway, it's another one of these things that, you know, we've been just given such bad advice. And what's interesting about that clip is what he outlines is low sodium creates this problem, and they've got a drug to address the problem that was created by the advice of being low sodium in the first place. Now, this does not mean go out and eat a ton of processed food and chips covered in salt, those kinds of things. But if you want to salt your food, you got a good quality salt. Don't believe the hype around this idea that salt is going to immediately kill you. Obviously, the research is showing that now. Be right back.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for today. I've got a long clip. I tried to leave myself some extra time in this last segment. I've got a long Dr. Axe clip. Somebody came to me with something, and I immediately jumped into research mode, health-wise. I do not take calls. I had a couple calls during this show. I'm not trying to be rude, but I do not want to be in a situation where I'm answering any health questions. I'm not qualified for that. The whole purpose of this show is to just light a spark, get somebody to consider a different way of looking at diseases and chronic conditions as something you do have some control over at your grocery store, that you do not have to wait for the next pill to come out for your condition or race for a cure, that the cure may actually be in the pantry at your house. But it's going to take a little bit of time, a little bit of research. If you've got testimonials for the fact that you've, you know, reclaimed your own health by changing your nutrition, I get these fairly regularly. I love them. And if you'd like to come on air and share with people the changes you've seen in your life when you changed your diet, I'm happy to put you on the show because I think those are inspiring stories. I've explained mine many times. I haven't had a sick day now, and I think it's almost 16 years. It's to the point of just being bizarre now for somebody who got bronchitis or the flu, or I got used to get bad staph infections in my tonsils each year. And so I know the nutrition stuff works. So if anybody wants to talk about it on air, things that you've done for yourself over the years, because let me tell you, when somebody changes their life with nutrition and they see chronic conditions just go away, excess weight just go away, their mood improve, they do like to talk about it. I love running into people who are into natural health stuff that have changed their diets and reclaimed their health. We can talk for hours. And that is a quite literal statement. I've been on the phone with people who have called me either from this show or just knowing I do the show, and I get an introduction to somebody and they'll say, oh, you need to call this person. And I'll talk to them, and we'll talk for 2 hours about all the things we used to do based on the advice we were given and lack of advice we were given, and instead the pills and medications we were on and what we changed and how everything just went away. I just absolutely love those things. They're like health freedom fighters to me. I'm always up for a conversation like that. You can also call me on the breaks if you want to. If you've got something you'd like to bring to my attention or a comment you'd like to make, you can call on the breaks. I just don't take calls live on air because I don't want to be saying anything that's construed as advice just because I'm not qualified, and everybody's different. That's why it's up to you to do your own research. Somebody did mention something to me a couple of weeks ago about stomach ulcers, and I had never talked about it before. I never share a name with anybody. I'm not trying to give up any kind of medical stuff, but if somebody brings up a topic with me, it may end up as a show topic. Let me just tell you. Nobody will ever know it was you that brought it up, that you're suffering from this or from that. But when I realize that it's something that people are suffering from, and people call me, friends, acquaintances will call me all the time and say, well, have you ever seen anything for, you know, have you ever seen any nutrition or any good supplements for, and then they'll name the condition. And I'm telling you, I love that. Now, somebody contacted me, I think it was 10:30 at night. I was about ready to go to bed. And I thought, no, I don't think I've ever covered that before. I'll look through my notes. And then I just jumped online, and within an hour, I'd found things, and I shared it with them. And I'm going to follow up with them and see if it helped. And this was about stomach ulcers. And I ran across a couple of good clips from some of my trusted sources, like Dr. Mercola, Dr. Berg, Dr. Axe, medical professionals who give empowering information. And so if you ever had problems, or anybody that you know or love has had problems with stomach ulcers, I would imagine that is horribly painful. I've had stomach problems myself. I don't know if I ever had ulcers. But this is Dr. Axe on causes and treatments, natural treatments for ulcers.
Hey guys, Dr. Axe here, doctor of functional medicine and founder of DrAxe.com. In this video, I'm going to share with you the 3 steps to overcome stomach ulcers really fast, as well as common stomach ulcer symptoms, so you know if that's actually what you're experiencing. And so I'm going to talk about the diets for ulcers, the supplements, and the things that you must avoid for quick healing. So first off, stomach ulcers happen within the stomach, and the pain you're experiencing tends to be caused by stomach acid affecting that ulcer or something that you've eaten, okay? So it's rubbing that ulcer in the wrong way. And sort of imagine you've got a burn and you're rubbing up against it or putting something acid on it and you're feeling that pain. And some of the biggest symptoms and warning signs that you have a stomach ulcer include pain anywhere from the navel up to sort of the chest bone area here. Typically right in this midsection, you'll feel pain, sometimes burning and cramping going on. That's a big warning sign. You can actually experience stomach ulcers on an empty stomach. So if, you know, 2 hours after a meal, you start having that pain and burning sensation, that's a warning sign you have a stomach ulcer. You can feel it in the middle of the night in many cases as well. And listen to this, 70% of stomach ulcers are caused by a bacteria called H. pylori bacteria. And so if we're going to correct the actual cause of stomach ulcers, it's so critical that we increase the good bacteria in your body and we get rid of the bad bacteria and reduce that H. pylori that's within your system. And so let's jump into the 3 steps you can follow right now to heal a stomach ulcer fast. Number 1 thing is remove the triggers. Overeating is one of the biggest things that can cause issues. So if you're eating large meals, you've got to stop that, okay? Eat smaller meals frequently throughout the day. The other thing that will bother is spicy food. So spicy food, where it's cayenne pepper, anything like that, black pepper, those can really fire it up and cause some of the pain. Also, doing certain products that are inflammatory in nature, processed food products can cause more issues than others. And then sugar. Remember, H. pylori bacteria, that bad bacteria, can increase within the stomach, which can cause that stomach ulcer. So again, staying away from processed sugar altogether is really important when it comes to healing stomach ulcers. And also, caffeine and alcohol can make stomach ulcers worse. And then eating nuts and seeds in large amounts. So nuts and seeds. And then acidic foods, such as tomato products, can sometimes cause more pain with a stomach ulcer. So number 1, remove those triggers. Step number 2, change your diet. Here are the top healing foods for stomach ulcers. Number 1 is bone broth. Bone broth actually is at a certain pH that can soothe the pain with a stomach ulcer. Also, bone broth contains proline and glutamine, two amino acids that can help heal the stomach lining. So I recommend 8 to 12 ounces of a cup of bone broth or bone broth soup 2 to 3 times daily. But remember, bone broth, the number one healing food for any type of stomach ulcer. Number two food is aloe vera juice. Drinking aloe vera juice throughout the day has a certain pH and certain nutrients called polysaccharides that can also help and repair that stomach ulcer. So again, bone broth number one, aloe vera juice number two. Number three food that's going to help heal that stomach lining are going to be vegetables, specifically steamed vegetables or vegetables in the crock pot, such as carrots are fantastic. Asparagus is good. And then the best food of all, actually another liquid here, is cabbage juice. That's number three. Cabbage juice contains a type of sulfur which helps heal the gut lining. So you can see with a stomach, if you have stomach ulcers, doing soups and juices are going to be the best. Again, bone broth, cooked vegetables, aloe vera juice, cabbage juice. These are the most healing foods when it comes to healing stomach ulcers. That's the sort of diet you're going to want to focus on, is doing bone broth and then drinking things like aloe vera juice throughout the day. But a bone broth soup with a little bit of chicken and cabbage is ideal for healing stomach ulcers. And the next step here, take the right supplements. The number one supplement you should be taking with a stomach ulcer is licorice root extract, typically 500 milligrams a day. So DGL, licorice root extract. Licorice root actually helps coat and heal and soothe stomach ulcer pain. Also, number two would be soil-based probiotics. Again, not just any probiotic supplement, but a probiotic supplement that has what are called SBOs, that's soil-based organisms, or soil-based probiotics. Those probiotics are going to help eliminate that H. pylori and that bad bacteria. The fourth supplement, or the third supplement, sorry, which could also be done as a tea, is chamomile. You can take a chamomile supplement or chamomile tea, which is very effective. The next, in chamomile, I'd recommend about 2 glasses of chamomile tea a day. The fourth thing you can do is take L-glutamine powder. L-glutamine is an amino acid that, imagine it as a Band-Aid to sort of cover up and protect that ulcerated area. And last but not least, consume bone broth protein powder or collagen protein powder. Both bone broth protein, you can do a scoop in a smoothie, or collagen protein, a scoop in a smoothie. They're full of amino acids that help heal the gut lining. So remember, if you follow these three steps of number one, get rid of those food triggers, from caffeine to sugar to spicy foods to alcohol and overeating, again, or eating too much, stay away from those things. Number two, get some of those healing foods such as bone broth, cooked vegetables, cabbage juice, aloe vera juice. And number five, take the supplements I just talked about. If you follow those steps, you're going to see your stomach ulcer symptoms are going to go away really fast. In fact, you can probably see results and see this totally healed within 24 hours following these recommendations. And by the way, if you want to learn...
All right, so there you go. I meant to look up, as the story's going, I'm thinking, can I do this right now? I'm meant to look up what the traditional protocol is for a stomach ulcer. I don't know if it is just a series of antibiotics or exactly what products are out there by prescription. But, you know, if this is something that you can try for 24 hours and see if you find results, it seems like something you might want to try. All of those things packed with nutrients that may have other beneficial effects on your body while you're trying to heal your stomach ulcers. I've never had one. Sounds absolutely horrible. Let's see if I can tuck this in real quick. I just ran across this. There was a tweet sent out by Robert Malone, the inventor of the mRNA vaccine, or the vaccine technology, who's kind of warning people about these shots in the mass rollout that we've had them, particularly in this way. He believes this has some efficacy for some people, but not for everybody. And he's been speaking out and has been censored. But he is on Twitter. He sent this out. I haven't even listened to this. We'll all listen to it together. He says, this is something that Anthony Fauci did. This is 2009. The description is he describes the profit model of these vaccine programs and things like just the regular flu shot.
The best way to get the stability to the system where the companies have a degree of confidence that things are not going to roller coaster on them is to just get more and more people vaccinated each year. If you look at the history of vaccinations for influenza over the last several years, with the increase and the expansion of the recommendations from the CDC, we've gone from 20, 30, 40, 50 million up to now over 100 million.
Wow, see that? I've been telling you all this time, the CDC is a vaccine sales organization. This is Anthony Fauci in 2009 explaining to you how they can help the companies sell more vaccines every year. Now, did the flu go away? Nah, it's been the same all along. But they've moved it from 20, 30, 40, 50 million shots a year to 100 million for the companies.
You know, as a public health person, I would think that the goal that I would see to really stabilize the system and therefore make it less of a crisis issue when you get to have a pandemic flu, which we know will again occur as was predicted, even though they're rare events, they do occur.
Especially when you create them.
Is to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And what we foresee in the future is that influenza vaccine will be something that is essentially a routine vaccination for everyone. And if we then transition that into the universal vaccine, then you may only have to do that every couple of years and get people protected not only from seasonal flu, but from pandemic flu. In my mind, that's the end game. And that's good for the companies, too, because they're going to know and predict that every year the vast majority of the American population is going to get vaccinated, not having to guess will they or will they not this year or next year.
Oh, gosh. Boy, I tell you what. Yeah, the companies have done very well under Anthony Fauci's tutelage. The American people and their health outcomes, not so much. Anyway, make some changes. Even small changes help. Take control of your health. Escape this medical system before it's too late. That's all the time I got. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.
No matter Bye-bye. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how